Well, how many of you know that the first step to solving a problem is admitting that there is a problem? Right? First step to solving a problem is admitting that you have a problem. Otherwise, there's no reason to solve it, right? Because you don't have one, right? A lot of us go around through lives, it's like through our life, we're like, we don't have any problems. Well, if I don't have problems, I got no problems to solve. But it also helps to have a proper view of a problem to be able to solve it. So not only do you need to recognize there is a problem, but your view, your perspective of the problem, it helps a whole lot if you have a proper view or a proper perspective, because we need to solve our part of a problem. When it involves multiple people, you know that you are a part of the problem, right? We always like to think the other person is the problem, and we're the solution. We're the one that's right, but there's always two parts when it involves other people. When's the last time you heard about someone blaming themselves in a bad situation, right? When's the last time you heard somebody where they're like, you know what, I'm the problem. Like, this issue I've got going on, I'm the problem. I'm the one that needs this and that and the other thing. No, it's always the other person. I know what their problem is. Listen, this is what it boils down to. People are selfish. People are selfish. That's true. All right? When being selfish means this, it means that you're the primary concern, yourself. Your primary concern is how you feel, what you want. And this becomes issue in all aspects of life, but even in marriage. We have our minister alliance meetings, and you know, it's great because ministers, we get to talk to each other and talk about how things have gone, some experiences we've had, and reflect and get wisdom from each other. But one of the pastors was telling me how they had done some marriage counseling with the couple, and he said, okay, well, let me hear what you got to say. And he said, okay, do you want to know what I have to say? And they were like, yes, please. And they're both thinking, he's going to say the other person is wrong, right? The other person has to do this. He said, are you ready for it? They're like, yes. What is it? He's like, it's very simple. They're like, okay. He said, you're both selfish. You're both selfish. That was the answer. And they're like, what? That's all you got? Like, I'm not the problem. They're the problem. And he's like, exactly. See, that's your selfish nature talking, that I'm not the problem, they are the problem, because you're thinking about everything from your point of view, your perspective. But, you know, even in marriage, people get selfish because things are always the other person. I've not done anything wrong. And what his point was is that if people would focus more on serving their spouse, then a lot of these problems would go away. If I had a serving attitude toward my spouse, a lot of my selfish issues and selfish ideals would go away, because not everything would automatically become the other person's fault. Now, where I'm going with this is we see this selfishness intervenes in marriage. And oftentimes, I don't see too many young people in here, but I probably would say it anyway, but it bleeds over into the bedroom. Okay? Just being real. If you guys know what I'm preaching on, it's the Ten Commandments, and we're at adultery. So, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about sex, okay? But this selfishness bleeds over into the bedroom, and a lot of times affairs take place because a person's unhappy with the way their spouse is treating them. So they go find someone that'll treat them a different way, and I'm not saying it always happens. Sometimes they just happen because of circumstances, but even if it's wrong. So the seventh commandment, Exodus 20, verse 14, do not commit adultery. Okay. Like last week was do not commit murder. This one also seems very simple on the surface, right? Should be easy to follow. Don't have sex with anyone that's not your husband or your wife. Bam. Worship team, come up. We're done, right? Like, that's the way that it seems. It should be that simple. This is God's design, right? This is what millions of people enter into every year, into these vows of marriage. And when they enter into these vows, the Word of God tells us that they are no longer two separate people, but what? They become one flesh. Okay, so two separate spiritual beings become united as one spiritually. This is the beginning of God's family unit, right? That even we talked about last week about how the devil wants to destroy the family unit, or a few weeks ago we talked about that. unity between husband and wife. You know what that brings? It brings stability to the home. Unity with the husband and the wife brings stability to the home. When a husband and wife are in unity, the foundation is set for the family, for the building of the family. It will be more solid. God says don't commit adultery because it messes things up. Okay, first of all, it just messes things up spiritually and emotionally. Okay, it brings ruin and destruction to the foundation of a family. Have you ever heard of adultery having a positive effect on a family? I have not. Now, I've heard of God using the situation and God working through it to make something good come of it. Sure, God can do that because that's what our God does, is he takes things that are bad, things that have happened, and he can inject life into them and make something good come of it. But the act itself did not make the family better, did not make the situation better. Proverbs 6:32 says this, "The one who commits adultery lacks sense. Whoever does so destroys himself." See, this is the thing, is it not only brings destruction on the family, but on yourself, on you as the individual, no matter what the temporary satisfaction may be, the long-term effect is destruction. The long-term effect is destruction. And you know, as I was reading through different commentaries and stories about this, it's like, you know, people have that grass is always greener on the other side type of thing. They often find out it's not. It's the same color over there, right? It's just the perspective. It's just the angle that you're looking at. But often it's the same thing on the other side. Not committing adultery is key to loving people, okay? Not just your spouse, of course it is that, but even the rest of your life, your family, your friends, your coworkers, because so many people will be affected by it, okay? Coming from a divorced home, and I've shared this before, you know, Christy and I both came from divorced families, and we were both like, there is no way we're ever getting a divorce. And this isn't about a divorce, it's about adultery. But our point was, we don't want our children, our family, to have to experience some of the things that we experienced. I just kicked that again. Sorry about that. We didn't want them to have to experience that because we know the destruction that it had on our family. Now, the thing is, it's not just right there. It goes on generation after generation. I mean, it goes on through the grandkids and through even friends, right? Even people that you work with, the people that have to hear about it and are involved in it, people that get dragged into it and pulled into it. And so one of the worst things about adultery is it can destroy you, because in committing it, not only are you affecting and destroying your own life, but it has tremendous effect on those around you. Now, here's the thing about it. As I was studying this topic, many times whenever adultery is committed, actually several, if not all, of the commandments tend to be broken throughout this process. Several, if not all of them. Okay, and when I first picked up on this, I was telling Christy, and then I was kind of trying to think of a couple, and I was like, well, maybe this one and that one wouldn't be broken. Well, sure, you could do it and not commit all of them, but some instances you can. We know that, first of all, you're not putting God first, right? Because it's your selfish nature and you're doing whatever you want. You have an idol because sex is becoming an idol. If you're a Christian, you're not properly representing God's name at that time. You're probably not getting much rest, right? I don't mean from physical activity. I'm talking about even just spiritual, emotional, trying to keep the puzzle together, trying to keep this part of your life over here and this part over here. You're probably not getting rest. You're murdering your spiritual life and probably somebody else's if they had one. You're dishonoring your family. Obviously, you're committing adultery. You may be stealing someone's spouse or at least their heart. You may be telling some lies to cover it up. You obviously want something that's not yours. It's a no-win situation. Right, all these things can be involved and wrapped up in that. And we see that with King David, right? Lots of people, listen, there's people that they know David by two things. What's the first one? Goliath. Usually Goliath, because we teach that one as children. We don't teach the story of Bathsheba too often to children. I don't, were we doing that on Wednesday nights? We're not teaching that to the young ones yet. Okay? So a lot of people don't know about that, but they almost everybody knows David and Goliath. They may not realize that that's King David, because at the time, he's not been put into the position of king. But a lot of people know David as the one who slayed Goliath, and if they know anything else about him, it's that he committed adultery, that he had the affair with Bathsheba. We see, you know, you read through this story, and there's a lot of issues with the whole story with David and Bathsheba. First of all, he was a king, and it even tells us that this is the time of year, this is the season when the kings and their armies, the kings go with them, would go out into war, and yet David's at home. Okay, so first step, he's like, he's not even in the place that he's supposed to be in, right? So he's messing up right from the beginning, setting himself up for failure. But we're told that he sees this beautiful woman, right? And it, Bathsheba supposedly was, she was very, very pretty, very beautiful woman, but he sees her and he decides that he wants her, even though she belongs to someone else. Now, this is a guy who we also know was what? A man after God's own heart. Sure doesn't sound like it, right? Not in this instance, but he's known as a man who was after God's own heart. He surely wasn't putting God first here. At this point in time when he's looking at this woman, he's not putting God first. He's not after God's heart right then and there. He becomes fixated on this image of Bathsheba, even, you know, not having an idol, right? Part of having an idol is an image, you know. We talked about that could even be a bad image of God, or it could be an image of what you desire. So he has an idol. He has this image of this woman in his mind that he's fixated on. And I imagine him not being able to rest until he has her, right? He sends somebody. He's like, go find out what that woman's name is for me. What a dangerous place to be in. Why, David, why do you need to know this woman's name? Like, whoever was serving him should have been a godly person, been like, dude, you don't need to know her name. Like, I don't know why you're asking, but you need to go hit the front lines. You need to get out there with your men. You don't need to know this woman's name. But he desires to know her name. He's not able to rest until he knows her. He dishonors his family clearly with this premeditated sin. But and finding out she was pregnant later, then he goes into the lies and the deceit, right? The trickery. Like, I'll bring her husband home from war so he has time to sleep with his wife so he'll think this baby's his, right? And he doesn't fall for that, you know? He's like, you know what? I should be out on the front line. Like, I appreciate you letting me come home, but I'm heading back out. So he doesn't fall for that. And then David's like, well, now I got to have him killed, right? Because it's going to come out. It's going to come out that I did this. So then he steals this woman for himself, right? To make it right. After her husband is dead, he's like, now I can legally marry her. She becomes mine, and the problem's gone, right? It's all fixed. I got it all taken care of, all smoothed over. This right here is King David that we read about, the mighty warrior, fought all these battles and did these great things for God, a godly leader, someone who walked in God's favor even as a king, and here he messes up big, right? This is a big mess up, because it's not even just like I stumbled and I committed a sin today. No, it's like sin after sin after sin, this whole thing being heaped upon him. This is a big time deal. And as we read this account, it almost seems like in that story, like he got away with it, right? Like he had it all smoothed out. Now I'm married to her. Now we're going to have a baby. It's going to be no big deal. But we know that he did not have it figured out. He had these consequences to deal with. It did damage to his soul. What he said in Psalm 51, this is actually about, this is in response to the situation with Bathsheba. Psalm 51, verse 2 and 3, he asked the Lord, I picture him crying out, wash away my guilt and cleanse me from my sin. For I am conscious of my rebellion and my sin is always before me. He says, it is always before me. You got to picture David in this situation. His sin is always before him. When he wakes up in the morning, right there it is. He's thinking about this sin. He's thinking about this whole master plan of how he concocted all these things and kept covering himself up and more sin to cover it up and more sin to cover that up. It's always before him, right? You imagine him looking at Bathsheba, at this lady he's taken as his wife. There it is. Bam. It's right here. It's before me again. Picture him seeing that baby, that child. Bam. Sin before me again. Picture him going to bed and he's laying there trying to get some sleep and he's like, it just won't go away. He's saying, this sin is always before me. It's just constantly there. He can't get away from it no matter what he does. He's very aware of his sin. And this is why in verse 10 he says, he asks God, create in me a clean heart and renew a steadfast spirit within me. These are the effects that it has on his life. What we see here is he asks for a clean heart. He's like, God, this sin is always before me, and the only thing that I can do is ask you for your help, for your intervention. I need a clean heart. See, it all started in his heart, because this is where adultery does start. It starts in the heart. Jesus told us this. Matthew 5, verse 27. You have heard it said, do not commit adultery, but I tell you, everyone who looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. See, the society that we're in likes to just tell us that sex is just a physical act, right? It's just something you do, right? I mean, I remember being in high school, in junior high, and it's just like, it's just something that people do. It's like, it's cool if you do it. No, it's not. It's not cool at all. It's sinful. And we know that it's much more than a physical act, because there's spiritual implications. It's why God designed it as he did, where man and woman become one. There's a spiritual side to it. And so when it comes to sex, if it's not godly, then it's demonic. That's true. If it's not godly, then it's demonic, okay? There's no other option. It's not just sex. It does matter what's in your heart and in your mind in regards to other people. So to think of a person, Jesus tells us to even think of them in a lustful way, to have that strong passion, desire, to long for them, it's the same as actually following through with the act. It's the same thing, because spiritually you have. Spiritually you have done it. And I'm going to tell you, this is something that probably many guys, if you've not said this at some point in your life, you've heard some other guys say it in a group. This is so stupid. It doesn't matter where I get my appetite as long as I eat at home. Have any of you guys ever heard that? Most guys have probably heard that before. They're referring to sex. It doesn't matter where I get my appetite as long as I eat at home. Basically, I can look at and think about and flirt however I want as long as I'm going home to my wife, you know. That's what people say. That's what guys say, okay? I'm going to tell you, this is a lie from the pit of hell. Okay, this is a lie from the pit of hell. It does matter who you've been looking at. It does matter what you've been thinking about, whether men or women. Okay, this does apply to women as well. This isn't just for men here. Don't think for a second that women don't deal with it, okay? But it is more common for men. Women do deal with it. I'm going to tell you just about a few stats on pornography, okay? Pornography is demonic. If there's any debate, any misunderstanding, anybody has a question about that, it is demonic. It's straight from the devil. It's not to, listen, it was never meant to help you in your sexual relationship. It does not do that. That's fact. It does not help you in your relationship with your husband or wife. Even if intimacy is lacking, that is not the answer. Okay, people are viewing it at an unprecedented rate. I want to share these couple of numbers. The porn industry generates $13 billion each year only in the United States of America. $13 billion. Now listen to this. This is with the revenue from pornography declining 50% in the last 10 years. Because of the amount of free porn that you can now find online. So even with it declining 50% over the last 10 years, the industry is still a $13 billion industry in the U.S. alone. I couldn't even find what it was globally, but you imagine like Japan and, you know, all these other places, big markets. It's tremendously more, but just in our country, $13 billion each year. And for those of you that just think, you're thinking right now, those unchurched heathens, right? Those unchurched heathens. 64% of Christian men and 15% of Christian women in this survey say that they've viewed porn at least once per month. Once per month. 64% of Christian men, 15% of Christian women, and those are just the ones who are willing to admit it. All right, I got these numbers from, I think it's xxxchurch.com. It's like a, it's like Covenant Eyes, one of those programs where you can put it on your computer and it'll block you and hold you accountable. But that's where I got these facts. And they also shared that it starts at an early age, which we know, okay? 9 out of 10 boys under the age of 18 are exposed to it, and 6 out of 10 girls. That's pretty high percentage. I believe I've shared before, but I was probably about 14 at a friend's house whose dad, I'm not kidding you, was a leader in the church. And he showed me pornography in his shed, right? I don't know, maybe the dad forgot they were out there, they were in a box or whatever. Maybe he hadn't been through the shed in 10 years, he got saved 7 years ago, I don't know. All I know is that's where I saw it at, in a shed, at a place where my mom and dad thought, he's safe going there. And I remember this boy, me and him going out in the shed, and he's like, check these out, right? That's where I saw it, in the shed of a Christian home at the young age of 14. I mean, this is like a drug. For those who have never been exposed to it, pornography is a drug. It is an addictive drug that has long-lasting effects on a person's mind. And I'm going to tell you, it's dangerous. And anybody that tells themselves lies to justify it, man, it's wrong. It's wrong in the eyes of God because it's adultery in your heart. Jesus said, if you look upon another with lust in your heart, you've already committed adultery. And I want to say that this doesn't just happen through pornography, because a lot of you are probably like, man, I've never been there. I'm clean on that front. That, praise God if you are. But I'm saying it doesn't, that's not the extent of it, right? It can happen with the person on TV, in the movies that you're watching. It can happen in the magazines that you see at the checkout stand. Listen, I despise going to the store. And that's why, is because of all the junk they put up by the registers to try to draw and lure men's eyes. Yeah, I like, you can ask Christy, if we're watching, you know, a show and like commercial comes on, if I can't change it or whatever, I'll just be like looking at the ceiling. We walk into a grocery store, I'd stare at candy, right? That's probably not any better. I like Reese's a lot, but I try my best to redirect my eyes wherever I can go. It can happen with the person standing in front of you in the line, though, right? It can happen with the person at the mall or the gas station, wherever you go, okay? This isn't just restricted to pornography. Matthew 6:22 tells us, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. So if the light within you is darkness, how deep is that darkness? See, Jesus is speaking here of the eyes and of light. And he's saying, you should keep your eyes on God. Keep your eyes on the Lord. You want to be viewing, you want to be receiving and taking in the light. Because if you are looking to God, you are going to be filled with light, filled with good. But if what you're looking at is filth, right? If it's porn, if it's models, if it's celebrities, listen, I do not have Instagram. Tried it one time. Some of the stuff that was popping up on my phone, I was like, no way. I cannot have this. Like, this is not for me. Women, you can have it. You can look at, do whatever on there, but I've looked at it real quickly, and I was trying to follow baseball players and preachers and people that were, you know, nothing bad, but all the stuff that it was popping up suggesting, I was like, no way, it's out of here. We should not be looking at the things that we shouldn't look at, because if we do, the word tells us we'll be filled with darkness. And that darkness is sin. You will hunger for what you feed on. You will hunger for what you feed on. In our house, you know, we've been trying to eat healthy for the last year or so. And sometimes I go months without drinking a Coke. And then I'm like in a moment of weakness, right? I have one. I'm like, oh my goodness. This is the most amazing thing I've ever drank in my life. Next thing I know, I'm drinking it out of the 2-liter. You know, it's like pouring down, probably not quite that bad. I don't want to waste it. I wouldn't let it pour down me. But then the next, like, I'm like, hey, I'm going to run to Dollar General, and I come back and I have another Coke, right? And I'm like, this is so great. I love it. And then next thing I know, I'm like, we got any ice cream? It does not help having these two kids in the house, right? Because they're like, can we go to Daryl's? No. Can we go to the Dairy Bar? No. Can we go to Culver's? No. And then the last chance is, can we go to Dollar General? I know what that means. It means, can we go to Dollar General and buy ice cream? But the point is, I start feeding on these sugary things, right? That I haven't had, and then I want them more and more and more. And I'm like, I just want to like eat a bag of sugar at this point. I want it so bad. Listen, that's the same way that the things that we view in our lives are. It's the same way. You want to know why people binge watch shows on Netflix? It's because it's right there and it's set up to automatically play the next episode. Well, who's going to stop it? Right? You're like, oh, I got another 30 minutes. I'll watch one more. This show's great. I love it. Right? The more and more you expose yourself to things, the more and the more you want them. This is why I tell people, no matter how difficult it is, read the word every day. But I feel like I'm forcing myself to read it. Who cares? I don't feel like it's genuine. I don't feel like I'm getting anything out of it. Okay, keep doing it. Keep doing it, because I'll tell you what, you're not going to get hungry for it if you stop reading it. If you leave it sitting on the shelf, folded up with dust on it, you know what it's going to get? More dust. You're not going to just be like, man, I haven't read that for a month. I'm so hungry for that. I'm going to stay up all night and read it tonight. No, it's not going to happen like that. What's going to happen is, you feed on it, you feed on it, you feed on it, and someday, somehow, there's going to be a breakthrough where you're like, this is amazing. I can't wait to see what's next. I can't wait until the next time I have an opportunity to read. I remember John Lamadue sharing his testimony about when he was in high school. Like, he was at school, and all he could think about was when he could get home, he could open his Bible and read it and spend some time with the Lord, okay? But you know what? It's because he was reading it every day. Like morning and night, and like that's what he was putting his value and his stock in, and he was getting the return on it, okay? So the things that we put into our bodies are the things that we're going to want more of. That includes what we're viewing, because you will hunger for what you feed on. So what do we do? Jesus, help us. Matthew chapter 5, verse 29 and 30. He's got the answer right here. If your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Put the pocket knives away. All right, we're not doing this right here, right now. We're not gouging out eyes. We're not cutting off hands. We've got a few nurses in the house, but I don't know if we quite have the material, the support stuff that we need, okay? This is not a literal command, right? So many times we tell people, you know, there's the camp of I'm not really believers in my opinion, but they want to take everything in the Bible and make it, well, it's not what it really means. It actually means this, and You know, it really represents this. It symbolizes this. And we say we should take things at a literal meaning unless God says that it's symbolic, unless you can see that it's symbolic clearly. This is one of those things. Jesus does not actually want us all walking around with one eye and one hand. Okay, this is one of those things. This is what you'd call a hyperbole, which is, for those who don't know, is it's a intentional exaggeration. The intent here is to show the seriousness of this sin, the sin of lust and of evil desire. So you could think about it like when we say it's raining cats and dogs, right? Have you ever heard that it's raining cats and dogs and then looked outside and seen cats and dogs falling from the sky? Probably not, okay? If you did, you probably would freak out a little bit. You'd be like, this is weird. This has never happened before. It is really raining cats and dogs. It's not like let's go all pick out a pet, right? Like, do you see any bulldogs? Let me know. Putting on Facebook, if anybody sees any bulldogs, let me know. I'm looking for one. I heard it's raining cats and dogs in Altamont, right? That's not what it means. It's a hyperbole. It's an intentional exaggeration. It means that the rain that is coming down, it feels like cats and dogs are falling on your head, right? It's so heavy. The rain's so heavy. The weight is so much that it feels like there's cats and dogs falling down. You guys get that, right? It's not pick out a free pet. It's an exaggeration. Okay, we know Jesus is not advocating here for self-mutilization because here's the thing. If you gouge out your eye and you cut off your hand, is it actually going to make a difference? Like, does that mean you're not, like, bam, magic, I gouge out my eye, I don't lust anymore, it's all gone? No, because it originates in the heart. Like, if you really want to, I guess if you really want to get rid of it, you'd have to rip your heart out. And you can't live like that. You can't, okay? He doesn't actually want us to do that because you would just sin with the other eye. You just sin with the other hand. You'd still have the same thoughts because you haven't dealt with the root of the issue, that it's in the heart. Jesus tells us what to do. He tells us to deal with the root, what the source is, the origin of the problem, because it's an unclean heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. All right? He says right eye, the right eye. The right represents the place of honor and authority, and your eye, if you look up the Greek word here, it actually means the eyes of your mind. Listen, you have the authority over the eyes of your mind. You have the authority over your thought processes, and it is up to you to make sure your thoughts are honorable, that they are focused on things that are good and holy. If they're not, if your eye causes you to sin, you're supposed to gouge it out. Here's what that means. It means to draw out, to root out. If your mind is full of sinful thoughts, full of sinful mindsets and ideas, you are to root them out because you are the one who has authority over your mind if you are new in Christ Jesus. You do. I know we say, well, I can't help what I think about. Oh, yes, you can. You may not just be able to control it all the time, but I'm telling you that other variables in your life, again, feed into that. How many of you have had a dream where you're like, that is the craziest dream I have ever had, and I have no idea what it means, and you tell your wife or your friend or something, they're like, oh, well, you watched that movie about that last night, right? You know, like, I was in a firehouse. I was sliding down the pole. And you're like, this is weird. I've never wanted to be a fireman in your life. Or in my life, and they're like, dude, you watched Backdraft last night. Remember? The fireman movie? Like they're sliding down the pole in the movie? Like, okay, the things in your life are going to feed into that, feed into you. And so you do have authority over your thoughts because part of that is what you're allowing to be poured into your life. 2 Corinthians 10:5 says, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Here's the kicker. Bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ and being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. Every thought, every idea, every reasoning, every philosophy that goes against what the Word of God says, every one of them is a lie from the devil. But you, who were born again, who have given your life to Christ, you are not subject to those lies. You are not subject. Listen, you don't have to believe what you think in your mind. You don't have to believe what you think in your mind. You're not subject to them. You don't have to think that way because you don't have to continue to think on sinful thoughts and ideas because Jesus came to set the captives free. See, when we feel like I'm in a place where I can't control what I think, I can't control what's going through my mind, what are you right there? You're captive, right? You're in bond. You're like, I don't have control. Once you don't have freedom and you don't have control, then you're captive. So if you're in that place and you feel like, man, I just can't help it when my mind goes there. I have no control over it. There's nothing that I can do about it when my mind goes there. Listen, Jesus came to set the captives free. He came to set the captives free. And who the Son sets free is free indeed. Right? This means if you are His, then you can take those thoughts captive because they do not enslave you. You are free. Gouging your eye out, cutting your hand off. I'm going to tell you, these seem like extreme measures. But I'm going to tell you what, sin is extreme. These seem like extreme measures, but sin is extreme. Sin is dangerous, destructive. It can cost you your life. And I think we need extreme actions. Right? We need extreme actions in regards to sin. If you desire to be free from the sin that is rooted in your heart, it's got to be cut off. It's got to be cut off. It means that whatever is feeding into it has got to be cut off. There has to be separation. There has to be changes made. There needs to be complete separation, drastic measures taken. And just think about for a minute, if we were to take this literally, we're going down an imaginary trip here. We're not actually going to take it literally. But let's say that Xander is having an issue with this. And so we're going to take out the pocket knife and gouge his eye out. Pop it out of there. Right? What is going to happen? He's going to bleed. It's going to hurt. There's going to be pain. There's going to be discomfort. There's going to be screaming. He is not for one second going to enjoy it. Not at all. It's not going to be like, oh, well, thanks, Dad. That wasn't so bad. Right? Like, his day is going to be ruined. Probably a long time is going to be, it's going to be changed. It's going to be drastically altered. Something is going down here. But it's going to create a tremendous amount of pain in his life. Well, listen, sometimes cutting the things out of your life that cause you to sin is painful. Sometimes cutting those things out can be painful. And sometimes there are things that you can enjoy and it's going to hurt to remove them. And I guess this is what it depends on. It depends on how badly a person actually wants to be free of the things that are causing them to sin. It may hurt to throw away magazines, videos for ladies, those erotic novels or 50 Shades of Hell or whatever kind of books or movies or these things that fuel lust in the hearts of men and women. It could be painful to throw those things away if there's something that you enjoy, if there's something that you like to do, if there's something you've invested money in, then it can be hard to throw those things away. It can be painful. Sometimes it could be painful for a husband to ask his wife to put in the password so he can get on the internet, right? Well, this is a pain in the rear. Every time I want to get online, I got to ask for the password. I tell you what, it's worth it if that's a struggle for you. It's worth it if you can't be trusted to be alone on the internet. It's worth it to go through that little bit of pain. It might hurt a little bit to not be able to watch that TV show or that movie that all your friends are talking about, that everybody talks about how good it is and how exciting it is and entertaining it is. And you want to see it so badly, but you know that there are those scenes in that movie that you shouldn't be viewing. It might hurt a little bit, okay? But how bad do you want to be free? Jesus says, do whatever you need to do to get rid of sexual sin. Whatever it's got to do. And, you know, things like inappropriate relationships, they lead there. They go there, okay? It happens. It may require a change in jobs. It might require a change in department or a transfer or something like that. As I was studying this, I read a story from Pastor Erwin Lutzer. He said this. He said, I told a man one day when he said that he was falling in love with someone at work that wasn't his wife, I said, change jobs. He said, oh, I can't do that. I have a wife and children to support. Think about that for a second. He's got this relationship there that's going to cause issues at home with his wife and his children. Change jobs. No, I can't. I've got a wife and children to support. So his response was, well, what would you rather do? Change jobs or have your eye cut out and your arm cut off? And he said, oh, well, I'd rather change jobs. And I said, you are lucky. Jesus said that you should be willing to cut out your eye and cut your hand off if that were necessary and if it were needed. We should be willing to go to that drastic of measures to remove sin from our life. He's not saying gouge out your eye and cut off your hand, but you should be willing to go that far if that's what it had to take for you to be free from sin in your life. What are you willing to do to save your own life? That's the question. What are you willing to do to save your own life? Because there can be restoration. There can be healing. There can be forgiveness. We see that, again, going back to the story of King David. Even now today, knowing about his mess up with Bathsheba, we still view him as the great king. We still view him as the man after God's own heart. We still view him as this great warrior that defeated the giant. And you know what Bathsheba, that whole situation became in his life? It became another giant. It became another giant that he had to defeat. It might have been a self-invoked, it might have been a self-caused giant, but it's still a giant that he had to defeat. Adultery starts with lust in the heart. Proverbs 23:26 says this, my son, give me your heart and let your eyes observe my ways. That's what the Lord says to us today. Says to me, says to you, my son, my daughter, give me your heart. So this should be a continual thing that we're giving our heart over to the Lord. Giving our heart over to the Lord. You know what? Sometimes I desire and I want things that are not God. That's part of being a sinful person living in a fallen world. Sometimes that's what I want. Sometimes I don't want to pray. Sometimes I don't want to go to church, right? Like, I'd love to just sleep in. I don't want to get out of bed today, right? Sometimes there are things that you desire. We have to continually be turning our heart over to the Lord, saying, you know what, Lord? I need, like, it's you. Like, and if I don't feel like I want you here, have my heart. Like, it's you that I need. I know that. Even if I don't feel it, I know it. We have to turn ourselves over. It says that when we do that, we will observe his ways. We're told to hate what's evil, to cling to what is good. We should set our hearts on eternity, on the things of God. Colossians 3:1 tells us, since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. So the question is today, how is your heart? How is your heart? Are there things that need uprooted in your heart today? And of course, we're talking about lust. We're talking about sexual sin, immorality. But you can look at this. If none of those are struggles for you, you can look at other things in your heart. Are there things that need uprooted today? Especially in the place of sexual immorality. Because I'm going to tell you that when you hear how God feels about this, when you see what the Word of God says about it, how you respond to His Word today will show you the state of your heart. It will. The response that you have will show you the state of your heart. If you guys would stand with me. I'm going to say that God sees your ways. Right? God sees your ways. The Spirit knows your heart, knows your motives, knows your intentions, knows your passions, your desires. There is no fooling the Spirit of God. Where can I go from you? Where can I flee your presence? You can't. It doesn't matter where you go. You can't flee his presence. You can't outrun him. You can't get away from him. He knows your heart. The question today is, are you willing to take measures that are so extreme that they may be as painful as gouging out an eye or cutting off a hand, if that's what you have to do to get free? Because God knows your situation. What he says is, he says, my son, my daughter, he says, look to me. You know when you're trying to get a kid's focus and they're frantic and you're like, look at me. Right? Have you ever had to do that with one of your kids? No. Hey, look at me. You know what I'm talking about? Ben, how many times did you have to do that with Dave? Like, hey, look at me. That's what God says to us when we're in this situation with our heart, is he's like, hey, knock it off. Look at me. If you would redirect your focus, if you would take your eyes off of this junk in your life, even take your eyes off of the problem and look at me. He says, if you will give me your heart, you will see my ways. You will observe my ways. And so he says today, he says, look at me. He says, it would be better that you enter the kingdom having gone through a little bit of pain in your life, going without some things that your heart desires. It'd be better for you to go into the kingdom missing an eye than to turn to those things for satisfaction in life. No matter the pain, no matter the cost, it is better. There's grace and forgiveness today. Grace and forgiveness are available at the feet of the Savior. We look at David, and as you read through the Psalms, he came in a place of humility. He came in a place of brokenness. He came in a place of honesty to God. So the question is, are you willing to do that today? Are you willing to seek him today? I know this is a difficult topic, because who wants to step down in front of everybody else and admit that, you know what, I need help? But we're going to offer that. We're going to offer the opportunity to do it today. If I could have Christy and Mark, if you guys would come down.